And my guests on Live and Local today are the four members of the Jupiter String Quartet. They are the string quartet in residence at the School of Music at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. They're in their second full academic year in that capacity, which also means that they teach students as well. But part of their role is to, I think, be an ambassador for the organization, for the school. And they certainly are a very active touring quartet. And they're about to give their first concert of 2014 tomorrow night at 7:30 at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. A really interesting program that includes music by Benjamin Britten, Franz Schubert, the latter being the piece that string quartet aficionados and some who aren't will know. And then a piece by Dan Visconti that probably nobody will know in the audience, but I might be wrong about that too. In any event, Nelson Lee and Meg Freifogel are the violinists in the quartet. Liz Freifogel, sister of Meg, of course, on viola. Daniel McDonough, husband of Meg, is on the cello. And thanks to all of you for coming in today.
Nice to be back.
Thanks
nice
for having us.
Here.
So I guess it might seem appropriate to ask, how are things going in your second year? How's this relationship between touring around the country and the world and teaching students working out for you?
It's going well. I mean, yeah, this is our second full year now, and last year I think in terms of our schedule was a bit of a transition year because we had sort of planned a year thinking we were going to live in Boston. But we ended up moving to Illinois, so we had to go fly back to the East Coast for these one-off concerts, so our travel schedule was a bit crazy. But this year, we organized it a little bit more, and I think we're all really, really enjoying being in the community here, and we love working with the students at the School of Music, and we really like our peers on the faculty, and yeah, we're having a great time.
It feels nice to have a balance to not just be performers, because it seems like the teaching informs so much of how you think about your own playing too. I found, at least, being able to figure out how to teach music, I think has made me think about my own playing in a different way.
Yeah.
Were you, any of you, doing much teaching before you came here, or was it pretty much
we did a lot of short-term teaching. We would go and be somewhere in residence for a week. Or we'd even sometimes go and visit the same place a few times a year. But we didn't have the sort of week-to-week teaching that we have here. So that's been a big learning process for us, too, learning how to pace the teaching through the whole year, through the whole semester.
It was teaching without long-term responsibility.
Yeah, exactly.
You can go in and you can be very inspirational, but then you never see the students again. You know? this, you know, you follow students through 4 years or 3 years of a DMA. Mm-hmm. So it's a different... You know, it's a different kind of approach.
It's harder, but it's more fulfilling, I think, in the end.
The the teaching in one place for a while.
Mm-hmm. Being able to develop a relationship with the students.
The sort you're talking about, you know, where you would be in residence here and there, that's mm-hmm. mostly teaching as a quartet, coaching as a quartet. Mm-hmm. Or was there some individual work?
A little bit of both. Like, we just came back from Oberlin College, being mm-hmm. there last week, so we'd do some chamber music coaching, and then we'd also hear some individual students. It really, you know, it's different everywhere we go. So that keeps our job interesting.
And here at the U of I, I assume you have the dual role. I mean, if you're a quartet in residence, you're doing chamber music coaching.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. Right. And also private teaching.
And then the private teaching.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Was I accurate in saying that to some extent, again, as the quartet in residence, part of your job is to go forth and carry the name of the school.
Mm-hmm. I mean, part of our job is to seek out students on the road where we go play our concerts and tell them about the wonderful school here in Champaign. So
has that happened so far, do you think?
Yeah. I mean, mm-hmm. for example, the Oberlin, where we just came from, we have students who are graduating this year from Oberlin who are going to come audition at University of Illinois. So, you know, this is the goal.
That's the goal. And then, of course, if they come here and you've beefed up the program, and then that part is successful. And if you turn out wonderfully brilliant violinists, cellists, and violists from the U of I, then you're a smashing success.
We'll see.
Well, we have them. Just a matter of people finding them.
Yeah, right. Well, let's talk about this program you're playing here. I think it's an interesting one. It has some pieces that I personally haven't heard. The Britten Quartet No. 3, which is what will open the concert, and then Dan Visconti's music. And we're going to talk about both of those coming up. The piece that is the biggest, I guess, and certainly the best known by far, is the Schubert Quartet, nicknamed The Death and the Maiden, or just Death and the Maiden, official title, String Quartet in D Minor, Deutsch 810, which nobody will know what that means.
Circles, we just call it Death and the Maiden, and everybody knows what you're talking about.
but probably not everybody knows why it's called that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So talk about the genesis of this piece a little bit.
Well, more than anything, Schubert was best known for his songwriting, his art songs. So a lot of his chamber music actually is inspired by music that he had previously written. I'm thinking the Trout Quintet is a perfect example. And this piece, of course, the second movement, the slow movements, or the heart of the quartet, is based on a song entitled Death and the Maiden. So that's where the quartet gets its nickname.
I actually have a little bit of the text to the song, if you want me to. It's pretty short.
That's fine. We just heard it at the opening, but in, mm-hmm. in German, so...
Yeah, so the basic translation, there are two characters in this song. One is the maiden, and one is death, you know, as per the title. And so first the maiden says, "Pass me by, oh, pass me by, go, fierce man of bones, I am still young, go, rather, and do not touch me, and do not touch me." So she says that to death at the beginning, and then he replies, and he says, "Give me your hand, you beautiful and tender form. I am a friend and come not to punish. Be of good cheer. I am not fierce. Softly shall you sleep in my arms." So he's sort of trying to convince her to come along with him, not to be afraid.
It's kind of a sweet depiction of death, you know, sort of a, he's kind of coaxing her in a way. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of, I mean, it's a very dark movement mostly, but there's also this kind of lighter, sweeter side to it at times.
Yeah, I think throughout the entire piece, you'll hear sections that are very almost like a dance every once in a while. And I always picture that being death trying to pretend that he's this nice guy, get the maiden to come along with him.
Well, is this the theme of Schubert's? Because I'm actually while mm-hmm. you're reading the text, mm-hmm. the song I was actually thinking of was the Erl King.
Yeah, that's a very...
It's similar, yeah. Mm-hmm. It is very similar.
That has a very driving rhythm to it.
Well, that's because Dad is riding on a horse.
Galloping. This is a sweeter song.
In fact, at the end of this quartet, the last movement is a tarantella, which has a very, speaking of driving rhythms... it's based on the idea of someone dancing to get the poison from a tarantula bite out of their body. So it's this very, the whole movement, it just drives from the beginning to the end in that similar fashion, very kind of fateful sounding movement. Mm-hmm.
So that's probably another conversation to link Schubert's songs, and mm-hmm. they happen. And then, so you mentioned the Trout Quintet, that one too, nicknamed because of one movement based on a song. Mm-hmm. Well, I know you want to play the piece, and maybe I'll ask a question or two after. Mm-hmm. This is the slow movement, which is the Death in the Maiden movement from the four movement D minor quartet of Franz Schubert, played by the Jupiter String Quartet live on Live and Local.
Thank you. Thank you.
The second movement from the quartet in D minor by Franz Schubert, the set of variations on Schubert's own song called Death and the Maiden, performed live in our studio by the Jupiter String Quartet, the quartet in residence at the University of Illinois School of Music. I'm Kevin Kelly, very pleased to have him in the studio with us today. Our broadcast is made possible with support from the Sousa Archives and Center for American Music, preserving our nation's music heritage at the University of Illinois, now featuring new exhibits entitled On the Road Again, Cruising Coast to Coast with America's Music. More information is available at sousaarchives.org. Incredibly moving piece at times, often extremely powerful, sometimes a little bit playful, and I imagine rather difficult.
Yeah.
It's difficult. Schubert, you have to be really thoughtful about what you do, but also if you try too hard, I think it gets bogged down. So it's a balance of finding how to make it really beautiful and personal and touching and not overly indulgent. So
that is the second movement of four, and the others, you know, considerably contrasting, although I guess overall sort of a darkish mood. Is there a sense that this movement is really the heart of the piece and the other movements come out of it somehow, or isn't it that closely linked?
There seems to be a kind of, at least for me, this is the heart, but there's a, the piece is wonderful because I feel like the movements are connected in their character some way. I mean, there's a lot of fate, I think, in the first movement, sort of approaching fate, like impending kind of idea, which I think fits the mood of the quartet, at least of the song that inspired the quartet, quite perfectly. And then as Liz was describing the tarantella at the end, sort of terrifying in a way. So I think that there's a lot of balance in the way he composes the four movements together, even though they're not necessarily linked in a narrative necessarily.
But this second movement, it ends with such kind of a feeling of acceptance, I think.
Yeah. It's the only one that ends major, correct?
Yeah.
So it has the happiest ending of the four.
Well, and the whole piece, the whole quartet just begins as an assault almost.
Yeah.
For sure. You know. Yeah.
Like a call.
A death fanfare.
Well, there's, you have, I mean, I guess a couple of themes at least running through your program. The first, this will be the last piece in the program, the Schubert, and I have neglected to say that Jupiter String Quartet will play this piece along with the other music on the program tomorrow night at 7:30 at the Krannert Center in Urbana. So you end with the Schubert, you know, there's the theme of death, obvious in this song anyway. Arguable, yes or no, in Schubert's own life that there was some influence last 5 years of his life, but then he had such a short life anyway. He probably, I don't know if he knew he was headed out, but Benjamin Britten did know he was headed out at the time he wrote the piece that you're going to start the program with.
Yeah. I think, in fact, Schubert did know when he wrote this piece as well, so they may have been in sort of a similar mindset.
State of mind. Yeah, the Britten, you know, we've been exploring the three Britten quartets at the Krannert Center over the last, well, since we arrived last year. So this will mark this as the final installment of these three quartets. Mm-hmm. And each one of these quartets, if the audience came to all the concerts, they would have noticed that they're completely different from each other. And this is a kind of elegiac swan song of a quartet, I think, and very haunting, much more atmospheric than the other two quartets that we played, I think.
And it was written in the last year of his life,
and
he knew he was...
He knew he was going.
You want to play some of the opening?
Sure.
Just to give a little bit of the idea of the mood. It's also an interesting opening with an interesting title. I mean, he doesn't give it, you know, first movement or adagio or whatever. He just says duets.
So he's exploring all different kinds of duets that you can have between the instruments.
Which you would think, I mean, if I just saw that as a title of a movement, I'd say, oh, it's going to be playful.
No.
Then again.
This is setting, this sort of sets the scene for the entire quartet in a very operatic way, I think. Because Britten was such a wonderful composer of opera, he has an amazing sense of tone color and how color can kind of set the mood.
You might also get the sense of water being, the idea of water being important. And I think you can hear that at the beginning here, to go along with the whole theme of death in Venice, which this quartet is based around.
We'll touch on that.
We'll get to that. But I think that you can hear from the very beginning, if you imagine that you're in Venice by the canals.
Just a taste of the very, very beginning of Britten's third string quartet, Jupiter String Quartet, playing in our studio here on Live and Local. Liz, you mentioned Death in Venice, which was the opera that came just before this. I mean, almost literally just before he wrote the quartet. Mm-hmm. Is there a direct link?
Well, there's some quotable things in the fifth movement, the last movement, some music from that opera. I don't think you need to know the opera. I mean, they're so slight, but it was his inspiration, kind of like Schubert. I mean, the song is completely different from the quartet. It's just the genesis. But there's some themes from the opera that I think Britten also struggled with, so this kind of obsession.
Well, and for those who don't know or have never read the Thomas Mann novella?
Yeah.
What's the gist of?
Well, I've never read it myself. But there's some issues of longing for someone younger than the protagonist. He sort of yearns for a younger boy.
And the protagonist is on the verge of dying.
And he's also on the verge of dying in the opera.
Like
so there's this kind of struggle between looking for beauty and kind of dealing with inner demons. This is a Cliff Notes version, obviously.
Obviously.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think throughout the piece, something that's very striking about it that I think audiences can latch onto is just like the sense of loneliness and the struggle that perhaps the protagonist in the opera and also Britten was going through. This, like, the textures are very sparse in general. For instance, at the beginning of that movement, and there's also the third movement, which is a long solo with very, very sparse accompaniment drone underneath it. Also, the fifth movement, which is also a slow movement, is very sort of simple in terms of the texture. There are some thick parts in the fast second and fourth movements, but in general, I think there's this sense of loneliness that kind of pervades the piece.
Yeah, it definitely feels like a final quartet when you listen to it, I think.
There are five movements in it. The fourth one, I think, is one you're going to play in its entirety. It's called Burlesque, and again, if I saw this on a concert program, without knowing anything about the piece, I'd say, oh, this will be a great deal of fun.
It does have a little fun in this one. Yeah.
What's it a burlesque of?
I don't know exactly. It's a grotesquerie of a scherzo. I mean, Bartok used that term a lot, too. It's sort of exaggerated in every way. You'll hear us using our instruments in extreme ways.
Liz, it says in our parts at the beginning, it says roughly, to play roughly. And it's also forte with all kinds of articulation marks. And
it has a kind of ridiculous trio section.
Ridiculous.
So in this trio section, I get to play, the viola gets to play behind the bridge. It says wrong side of bridge, and I play like this. So I'm doing
lovely
that.
Lovely sound.
And while I'm doing that, Meg is doing colegio, hitting the strings with the wood of her bow. Yeah. So there's a lot of that type of little special effects.
Mm-hmm. So playful Britain style. Yeah.
Dark playful.
Dark Britain style.
Cool. Here's some Shostakovich influence in this movement also.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, let's give a listen. Fourth movement, Burlesque, from the Quartet No. 3 by Benjamin Britten. The Jupiter String Quartet, live in our studio on Live and Local. Quick one.
Mm-hmm. Well, I thought that was kind of fun.
Yeah.
Definitely.
He's got a lighter side.
And probably fun to play. I suggested that the Schubert perhaps difficult to play. I suppose this probably is too, but.
Mm-hmm. But you can lay into it, which is fun.
Yeah, parts of the Schubert, I guess, you can lay into, but. Mm-hmm. I mentioned that. Before we started talking about the Britten, that there's obviously some sort of theme of death linking the first piece and the last piece. But there's also, as I understand it, just from reading the brief introduction and the notes to your program, that there's this theme of song running through all the three pieces on the concert. Mm-hmm. And we haven't really discussed the second one yet.
Yeah, it's a vocal-inspired string quartet.
Yeah,
so the middle piece on the program is a piece that we commissioned in 2009 from a young American composer, sort of rising star in American composition. His name's Dan Visconti. I say the American part because he really takes his influence from American musical heritage, rock and roll, the blues. And in this piece, the songs of Tin Pan Alley, music by Irving Berlin, Hoagy Carmichael, the publishing houses of is it West 29th Street, 28th Street,
28th Street.
Tin Pan Alley, before kind of the advent of recorded music, when people would play this stuff in their homes, there was a huge demand for these little ditties, these kind of things that amateurs could play, and Dan was really inspired by that and wanted to write a song cycle for quartet based on this kind of music. It's all original music. He doesn't borrow anything, as did Britten and Schubert from themselves. This is all his own stuff, but
influenced by
that kind of music.
Yeah. And is this on the program partly because of the song connection intentionally, but also partly to give people a break?
Yeah.
A little bit of both.
It's a lighter piece.
Yeah.
Yeah. For sure. It's a youthful. Oh, Schubert was young, but that's a dark piece.
Well, Schubert was young, but he
was dying.
He was not a young soul. It doesn't
matter.
No, this is a youthful piece. In fact, the first movement is called Youthful Bloom. So it's kind of sandwiched between these portraits of death.
What's Dan Visconti's own background? And is he somebody, how did you know him?
We first met Dan in Cleveland at the Cleveland Institute of Music, where three of us went to school. He was actually dating a violist I was playing with in a different quartet. And I didn't know much about him as a composer, but he wrote one other quartet before this that we really loved. It's very different. He's just a very creative person, and we got the chance to work with him on this piece a lot, and he spoke about it when we premiered it in 2009, and he just is a very creative person. So
he's just getting back from Rome, where he won the Rome Prize this last year, so he's been composing over there. And
I love this piece. I think it's nice to revisit a piece that you get commissioned for, you, because sometimes you play those pieces and they don't last. They're hard to program, and I feel like this one is not. So,
You said he was dating a violist in a quartet. Is he also a string player?
I think he was a violinist at one point, but
he was studying composition though in Cleveland. That's why he was there.
Well, I guess where I was getting at is whether he's got a background that enables him to write particularly well for string quartet.
Well, he does know a lot about
this. He does write really well for the instruments.
He knows how to make the instruments sound like
other things
in a good way.
Other things meaning other instruments.
Other instruments.
Voices.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, folksy instruments, slide guitars, you know. Mm-hmm. The cello in this piece at times is playing like a slap bass, you know, kind of a honky-tonk bass. Mm-hmm.
He has a sound kind of like a record player at the end of the piece. It's not, I guess there are special effects. It's a very kind of lyrical piece in sometimes, but he also has us do like some scratching sound, some weird whistling in and out, not necessarily beautiful.
He
all
actually
of the time
has us pretend in one place that we're lost. So we're supposed to sound, if you ever heard, you know, that when you get really nervous and your bow starts shaking or you scratch a little bit on the string. So we're supposed to do those things on purpose in some parts of this.
Which I'll bet is sort of hard because
you're
well trained
to make
to make beautiful sounds.
Yeah, the funny part is for me, when I'm nervous, it's actually hard to scratch on the string for some reason. I don't know. So it's kind of like a...
You're lucky. It's not hard for me.
No, I mean, there are plenty of other bad things that come out, but it's, I don't know why. So I think he wants us to sound a little bit like we're making the piece up at times, but it's very, very specifically written on the page. So that's sort of an interesting thing to figure out. We have to go through all these details and then sort of let go of it, make it sound like we're making it up.
Maybe, I don't know if maybe you mentioned it earlier, but the piece is called Ramshackle Songs. Mm-hmm. So even the idea of this kind of cobbled together set of songs already implies this kind of casualness among us. And the way we interact with each other as a quartet is much more casual, less serious. So he very meticulously composes that into the piece. For example, always rushing ahead, lots of tempo changes. Sometimes he'll leave an eighth note out of a bar to make a bar that's normally in a square meter suddenly feel lopsided, as if one of us was so amateurish that we rush to the next downbeat and then the rest of us have to catch up. You know, that kind of feeling. So give the piece a less buttoned up quality.
I think another on top of that, something that actually makes the piece really effective is that he, within that like sort of loose structure, he's actually, the structure of the piece is actually pretty well planned out. All the themes of the movements, there are 9 movements, I think, sort of are derived in the from the first movement. Mm-hmm. And then as the piece sort of progresses, each movement gets shorter and shorter so that it seems sort of like this, like each style of music is being blended over with the next one so that you get the sense of walking down West 28th Street and hearing all this different kind of music at the same time simultaneously.
Sounds so like Charles Ives.
Yeah, exactly.
It's
kind
of
Ives-y
in that
yeah.
way. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think you were going to do 2 movements from this, and we might just have time to do that.
We'll just do the first part. Yeah.
Oh, well, let's
I think
play
we're
the first
actually
section.
We're going to play up
1, 2, 3.
The first, 3 movements. They're relatively short movements, and they run all together.
Okay.
Yeah. And you'll know. So the first is called Youthful Bloom. It's a very sweet lyrical movement for the most part. The second is called Remembrances. It's very nostalgic. And the third is Steam Whistle Shuffle, and you'll hear us playing that because we'll hopefully sound like a train, a runaway train.
It's the Jupiter String Quartet. They're going to be playing tomorrow night at the Krannert Center, a recital at 7:30 that includes the Ramshackle Songs of Dan Visconti, the first 3 movements, live in our studio on Live and Local.
Thank you.
And there you have it. The first three of the ramshackle songs by Dan Visconti, played live in our studio by the quartet that commissioned the piece, the Jupiter String Quartet. And they'll play all 10 of them, along with the third quartet by Benjamin Britten and the 14th quartet by Franz Schubert, known as The Death and the Maiden. Tomorrow night at 7:30 at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, the Jupiter String Quartet are the quartet in residence at the University of Illinois School of Music. They are violinist Nelson Lee and Meg Freifogel, violist Liz Freifogel, and cellist Daniel McDonough. And thank you very much for coming on the show today. It's been
a lot
of fun.
Kevin.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
And I'm sure you and the audience will have a great deal of fun tomorrow night.
Yeah.
Live and Local is supported in part by these business partners: Swires Land and Management Company of Danville, Murray Wise Associates, LLC of Champaign, First National Bank and Trust Company of Clinton, and Bates Commodities Incorporated of Normal. These business partners join the friends of WILL in making great programs possible. And we thank you very much for your support.